15 national championships, 27 SEC titles, 131 first-team All-Americans, 70 postseason appearances, 39 postseason victories. This is Alabama football. And this is Alabama Tradition with Martin Houston and Ryan Fowler on Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
Conversation. We're going to talk about Alabama, trying to find a way to get to repeat status. We've also got a couple of coaches that have been named officially through the University of Alabama. That will be a big topic of conversation. A lot of things that we'll get into. Senior Bowl happening right now, and we're going to be talking about leading into this NFL draft. We will also spend a lot of time talking about Coach Paul Bear Bryant. And from a coach perspective with Chris Landry, can help us understand exactly the impact, and we'll share some memories. We will also take phone calls. We'd love to have you at 205-342-9904, 205-342-9904, as we travel throughout this edition of Alabama Tradition. For those who are tuning in, Martin Houston still not with me because he is running for mayor of the city of Tuscaloosa. So according to FCC regulations, he cannot be on while he's seeking a public office, and that's okay. We're abiding by that particular rule, but I'm so grateful to be able to welcome in Chris Landry, LandryFootball.com. Chris, welcome in to Alabama Tradition. I hope you're having a great day.
I'm having a great day. Always good to be with you, Ryan, and a lot going on, as you mentioned. I've got Senior Bowl duties this week, heading back there in the morning, not too far a trip. Got 7 Alabama guys there, a lot of other players there, of course, and a lot going on. You mentioned the coaching staff and obviously the finishing of recruiting. Just a lot going on in football right now that I always tell folks it's sometimes the busiest time when we get towards playoffs and everything, because you got games, you've got coaching searches, you've got recruiting, you've got the beginning of the preparation to the draft. I mean, it's nonstop during this time of year.
Well, Chris, I tell you what, we do this normally at the end. I say we do both. Why don't we start out talking about the website and invite people how they can get more information from LandryFootball.com?
Very simple. LandryFootball.com is where you want to go. We've got a lot of free stuff. We've got access to our Twitch TV channel. You can click on the follow Chris on Twitch. You can get right there and watch the TV shows. In fact, this show is right live on Twitch right now. You can get all of our podcasts. We've got free information, but we also have, for a very, very nominal fee, basically access to your own scouting department, coaching department, for less than the magazine subscription. It's less than $10 a month. It's even less than that if you take advantage of the year offer. And we got our scouting season offer up now. So if you are into recruiting and you want to know about the players that Alabama or anybody else signs and truly what they're all about, we've got that for you. You'll want to understand about how you evaluate roster evaluations of how things are meshing together as they get onto playing on the college game. Got that for you. You want to know how these players translate to the NFL. We've got that for you. So it's everything from recruiting to college football to the draft, to NFL analysis of all the games and during the course of the season, free agency, coaching searches. What are you getting? What are the styles of the coaches as the coaching changes, carousel constantly changes, as we've got most of them filled at this point, but the assistant coaches are, very, very active still. So we got all, it's one-stop shopping football. And it's like, again, having your own coaching and scouting department for less than a magazine subscription. So LandryFootball.com is where you want to go for all of that.
So we are talking, if you love football, you're going to love LandryFootball.com. And the content that Chris is talking about, he takes his expertise and kind of mixes all that together as we continue to move onward here. Chris, let's go to Coach Bryant. I'd love for you to share a memory first, and then I want to get into maybe how he impacted the game and how he shaped the game of college football that we know now. Do you have a memory of Coach Bryant?
Well, I do. Not a lot of personal interaction, as I was not coaching actively when he was coaching. But growing up in South Louisiana, I saw the impact that he had, as he, you know, LSU could never beat him or his teams in Baton Rouge anywhere. It was not many people did. But Coach Charlie McClendon, who I got to know very, very well, played for Coach Bryant at Kentucky, along with Howard Schnellenberger, Babe Parilli, and those great Kentucky teams that he had in this brief stint that Coach Bryant was there. So I got to know him through several assistants that worked for him. So I felt like I knew him, but I never knew what it was like. I also got to know him very well by a very good friend. And for those of you, to those of our listeners that listened last week when I came on, John Mitchell was a guy that was a good friend that we coached together at LSU. John Mitchell played for Coach Bryant. John Mitchell coached as a young coach for Coach Bryant. I also spent time, shared office space with Ozzie Newsome. We worked together and came up in scouting and coaching together. Ozzie tells stories about being recruited by Coach Bryant, playing for Coach Bryant, and obviously having a great relationship with him. So there's a number of people that I've come in close contact with. I guess the best thing that there are a number of ways that I can describe Coach Bryant. But I think it was the innovative ways that he did things that were so unique. Different world at that time, in a different way that you went about coaching. You didn't have scholarship limitations. You did things differently. I mean, when he started coaching, you didn't have film review sessions. I mean, it wasn't to Coach Paul Brown brought in the film. I mean, most guys went out and they coached on the field, and then they met a little bit, talked about what they're going to do in practice. And it wasn't quite the same as it is now with all the modern technology, of course. But with Coach Bryant, he always had an edge. He always was looking at ways to get better. He always used to tell coaches, I'm told, that I would never hire a coach on my staff unless that coach knew more football than I did. And what that meant was people said, oh, he's just being humble. Well, yeah, I think there's a lot of it. But in other words, if he was going to hire somebody to coach the offensive line or coach the defensive line or run the entire offense, he wanted somebody that knew more because he was so confident in himself that Coach Bryant wanted to lead. He wanted to be innovative. He was constantly trying to reinvent himself, and he did. You know, when Coach Bryant came in, he built a program, but he had some lean years. I mean, he had some years where, I mean, it wasn't very good, and he reinvented itself. And can you imagine ever being able to accomplish what he did the year that he put the wishbone in and he went to Texas and he learned it and he kept it quiet? I mean, you'd never be able to do that today, and he did it. But he was always thinking ahead. And it's little things like, you know, he was one of the first ones to say, we're going to have coaching clinics. What's coaching clinics? Well, he would, because he was so confident in himself, he would have high school coaches that he would pay for the high school coaches. He'd feed them. He'd put them up in hotel rooms. He'd give them mileage money. High school coaches would come in, and the Alabama coaches would share ideas with high school coaches. Yeah, we're going to help them because they're going to help us recruit. And when we go recruit one of their boys, we want them to be on our side. So we're going to do more. And there was old things. Fact, it caused some NCAA rule changes. He would give them goodie bags with, you know, sweatsuits and things and all that. And well, that, it was all genius. He was marketing. They'd go back to the high schools. The coaches would be wearing Alabama hats and T-shirts and all that kind of stuff. That's all good. And he wanted to teach them exactly what he was running. So if he taught guys, I mean, for years and years, all those high schools that were running the wishbone, well, because if they're running the wishbone in high school, then we're able to evaluate exactly what we're going to be asking them to do here. So it makes it an easier evaluation. So we're going to help them. They're going to help us. A lot of things that he did that was very, very unique in how he went about, building a program and doing things and thinking ahead and being ahead of the game. He was really, really transformative in those times. So, I also thought it was genius when he got the job at Alabama. And those of a certain age will remember that, it was every Sunday afternoon. It was the Alabama replay. And this was back in the day, Ryan, when they had only one college game on Saturday. What did Coach Bryant do? He negotiated the rights where he owned Alabama's rights for the game footage that were not live. That was genius. So wow. It was like, if you had to watch, you didn't see Alabama play unless you were in the stadium. So on Sunday on the Bear Bryant show, when he'd sit there and he'd open up the Golden Flake potato chip or popcorn bag and he'd dump it in and he'd chew and he'd mumble and he'd drink that Coca-Cola and, oh boy, that's good there, Charlie. And then he'd sit there and he'd say, bingo, Charlie, as always, there's old Ryan Fowler there from Tuscaloosa and boom, bingo. And he'd do that. Well, all that film, anybody would come in and watch that because you didn't see the game on TV before. And he actually owned those rights. How smart was that? So he was ahead of his time on a lot of things that he did. And, back then you could recruit as many players as you wanted. He'd find out that Mississippi State was recruiting some kid in Biloxi that was pretty good. He didn't know about it. He'd send one of his GAs down to sign that kid. He didn't know whether the kid could play or not. But in case he did, he wanted to have them. And they'd recruit 25 running backs a year and figure out who can play then. So I think the fact that he was innovative, ahead of his time was his real genius, more than just the pure X's and O's, which he was very good at. But a towering figure, man. I'd never forget being in Tiger Stadium and he'd lean on that goalpost. And for people who didn't know him, he was big. He was a big man. He'd lean on those, with his sport coat and that tie that was way short, and he just had that hat down, and he'd lean up against the goalpost, and there were some LSU fans that were throwing oranges at him because one year LSU's playing, and if they were in good shape to go to the Orange Bowl. That was the thing they did. They threw an orange hit Coach Bryant in the shoulder. It dropped down to his seat. What did Coach Bryant do? He bent down, he picked it up, he started peeling it, and he's eating an orange while watching warm-ups. He was John Wayne cool. I mean, he was everything to those of us that aspire to be coaches.
Well, and I asked Joe Namath, I'll never forget it. I could almost like quote it. I said, what was your first impression of Coach Paul Bear Bryant? He said, an extra large man. I mean, you walk up and he's like a giant. And we were talking about it, Chris, with just different people. Bill Searcy was an offensive lineman. He's probably about, probably 315, 320. He was a big offensive lineman for the 70s. Very versatile guy, could play guard, could play, played some tackle, played, at center. But he said, one of the things that Coach Bryant would do is he cut the legs off of the couch. He said, so not only was he 6'5", but he would overtower you when you're sitting there in that couch in his office. He cut the legs off of the couch where he would overtower you, and he was so intimidating.
Yeah, and I think, of course, you can see the replica of his office, but, yeah, that was kind of set up to where, I didn't know about the legs on it. That's great because that was kind of his way of and he was larger than life. Some of the footage that, he always wore the fedora, except when he was – like playing the Superdome, because I went to several games. I was at the Penn State game in the Superdome, the famous Sugar Bowl game. He never wore a hat inside because Mama said to never wear a hat inside. So he never wore it in the Superdome. And I don't know that there wasn't really – the other domes weren't there. I don't know that he – I don't remember him playing in the Astrodome because there wasn't any big games there. Superdome was the one stadium where it was indoors, all of them were outdoors. So he had the fedora, but during the during practice, he wore a ball cap, Alabama ball cap. He'd come out of the, with the long pant khakis from the tower, and he'd come down and he'd run a block, and he's running a blocking technique, and he'd get down, and you got guys that are fully padded, and he gets in and he's ramming the shoulder and he's moving big guys back. And you know, at this point he was like 62, 63, and you're looking at it thinking, good Lord. I mean, this old man's going to kill himself. And the hat's falling and he's there, but he's just this big old giant of a guy, figuratively and literally. And it was, you know, the whole him in the tower, and he just hot down from the tower. It just is. It's in an era too, Ryan, where we, as a society, we revered people more. We didn't question authority as much. You know, back in those days, Coach Lombardi, Coach Paul Brown, Coach Halas, Coach Bryant, you know, all the greats, whatever they said went. You know, they said do something, you didn't ask how or why, you just did it. And I always kind of compared him to John Wayne. He was a John Wayne type figure that, you know, you didn't have criticism back then. I mean, you didn't have talk shows. You certainly didn't have social media. And, you know, he'd sit down and, you know, the press conferences, they tell me in those days, were just a big round table, and they had maybe five or six media people, and they'd sit down and have Jack Daniels and Coke, which was his go-to, and they'd talk and he'd say stuff. And of course, back then you printed what they kind of told you to print. You didn't talk about things that he didn't say was okay to talk about. But it was a different world. And, than it is today, where you're managing a lot of different things, and recruiting was, you got recruited by Alabama or anybody, you were honored. And now it's, you know, it's just a different world. But, you know, of course we're talking about him today. I remember January 26, because it's the day that my dad's birthday, who I lost in 2004. But I remember when Coach Bryant passed, I remember it was actually my dad that told me it hurt. My dad was a hardware salesman, and he heard it on the radio when he was working, and came home and he told us, and I heard it then. And then I'd forgotten that it's a year anniversary that Kobe Bryant passed. I didn't realize it was the 26th that Kobe Bryant had passed. So it's a day that I remember, and I still remember the day of the funeral and everything. And for those in Alabama, everyone will remember it. But I remember, you know, it's national news. It's everybody there. And it was like, you're talking about a who's who of football. Everybody came in from everywhere, all four corners of the country, to pay their respects to Coach Bryant. He was a larger than life human being, and certainly the most iconic figure in probably football history, certainly in college football history. The only guy that would be close would be Lombardi, and that's probably has to do with more with NFL films and kind of how his legacy was built and built on the Packers in the day.
We are talking a lot of Alabama Crimson Tide football with Chris Landry, LandryFootball.com. This is Alabama Tradition. We will break here. We will come back, and we will take phone calls at 205-342-9904. Darlene, North Carolina, will be first up. Terry in Richmond, Virginia, will be second up, and we'll get to all the other callers coming up in just a couple of minutes. Alabama Tradition, the past, present, and future of the Alabama Crimson Tide. Nukes Eatery, located at 205 University Boulevard. Call ahead orders at 205-758-2455 on all the convenient apps. Have your food delivered right to you. Grilled and toasted sandwiches, handcrafted pizzas like the sausage and pepperoni, the Nukes Q pizza, Mediterranean, the five cheese, the pepperoni, and so much more. Great salads like the ultimate, the Nukes favorite, the chef salad, and so much more. The great sandwiches, Nukes Q chicken salad, the pimento cheese sandwiches, California style pizzas, and salads. It's Joel Bromfield. It's Nukes Eatery on University Boulevard, 205 University Boulevard, 205-758-2455. Catering from a small office party to a larger event, it's Nukes, close enough that you could smell the championships there on University Boulevard.
You are listening to Alabama Tradition with Martin Houston and Ryan Fowler. Your connection to Tuscaloosa and the University of Alabama Athletics on Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
right, so we welcome you right back into Alabama tradition. The past, present, and future of the Alabama Crimson Tide. I will tell you that Alabama's doubled up on Kentucky right now. We're looking for a sweep of the season. We talk about Nate Oates and the basketball program, number 9 in the country right now, playing Kentucky inside Coleman Coliseum. So Alabama's doubled up. Last time I looked up, a 15-7. 15-7 Alabama with a big lead. And this will be the first time since 1988 that they have been able to sweep the Kentucky Wildcats. So Nate Oates has got everybody believing. And even Nick Saban talking about his program. Chris, I'll share you a real funny story with about Nate Oates and Nick Saban. A couple of days ago, there was a pretty all-star player, Jordan Bruner, went down with a meniscus tear. And Saban had asked Nate, he said, well, how long is it before you're going to get your guy back? And he said, well, it's going to be about 4 to 6 weeks. Saban says, 4 to 6 weeks? He said, meniscus? We get them back in 2 to 3. What's wrong with those guys?
Oh, yeah, probably. Don't make them like they used to. Those basketball guys are not tough like the football guys. He's to throw that out. He tends to throw that out at
you. Yes, that's a famous phrase of his. They don't make them like they used to.
And, yeah.
Well, and you know, we look at the similarities, and we're going to get some phone calls here, but maybe your number one similarity between Coach Bryant and Coach Saban.
Well, I think the visionary ability of both to oversee a program, to coach the coaches, to get everybody to focus. Coach Bryant was famous for this with his staff. He would basically assign teams. So what he would do, he would say, all right, coach so-and-so, so-and-so, and so, you three guys are responsible for Tennessee. He would literally pay them extra money. Your job is to find us 2 or 3 things that we need to do to beat Tennessee. You three are the ones responsible to figure out what we needed to beat LSU, so on and so forth. Well, you guys are, and it was just, of course, everybody was involved in every game, but it was an extra way to motivate, because if you didn't come up with something, if you didn't do a really good job, you didn't want to let him down. And that was kind of the message that I always got, was you didn't want to be the guy to let him down. You didn't want to be, if you're responsible for being prepared for, you know, Tennessee and maybe the guys that did a better job in preparing for LSU, you didn't want to be that guy. That was his way of motivating, challenging them, getting the most out of them, and then rewarding them with, you know, a little extra something. It might be, you know, a really nice fancy gift or just money. I mean, it just extra money you throw them, you know, when the monies weren't great back in those days. So that was real key. The attention, the detail. Nick is great at delegating. Now the staffs are much larger today, but then there's a whole lot more to do. The more technology you have, the more you can break down, the more things you do. He defines a role for a coaches, players, just like Coach Bryant did. But so that is the thing that maybe is the most similar about them, but yet how they did it was different because the game was so much different and the society was different back then.
Let's go to Darlene in North Carolina. Darlene, you're on with Chris Landry and Ryan Fowler on Alabama Tradition. Thank you so much, Darlene.
You're welcome. How are you doing today, Ryan?
Oh, super outstanding. Couldn't be any better.
Well, I've enjoyed the stories that Chris has been telling about Bryant. They're really cool.
So have I.
Hey, Miss Darlene, how are you?
I've enjoyed his conversations during the year very much. Also, I would be remiss if I didn't point that out.
And we do enjoy Chris being a part of our show. I'm sorry, Chris.
Thank you, Miss Darlene. It's so good to be with you and all the great listeners there, and of course, Ryan.
Well, you're very welcome. But Ryan, you left two things open in the former part of the show. Number one, Ryan O'Neal.
Ah, remember? Okay, all right. So, Chris, let me catch Chris up to speed. Okay, somebody called in and asked me earlier about my name, and I brought it up that I was named after a soap opera star. I'm not named after anybody famous. It's just Ryan O'Neal. And so then I started calling out, and people said, "Who is this guy?" I said, you guys are going to have to ask the ladies who listen to the show, Because my mom used to tell me, but I have no clue. So I know, you know, we're talking about football.
So you were named after a soap opera star that was named Ryan, but you don't remember who the Ryan was?
Well, I know it's Ryan O'Neal, but I don't know anything about him.
Oh, Ryan O'Neal. Okay,
yeah. I don't know anything about him. And so that's where I guess I was leaning on Darlene's expertise in the first 4 hours.
You know, my niece is named after she was my sister's second daughter, and she was named, well, her name is Laura, and she was named after a soap opera girl because my sister and the oldest daughter would watch this soap opera, and apparently there was somebody called Luke and Laura, and so whatever soap opera that was, and she was named.
She was named after Laura.
Yeah, how about that?
Luke and Laura.
Okay. See, I mean, you get all sorts of scouting on this show.
This is awesome stuff. Yeah, you never know what you're going to learn.
Well, Ryan O'Neal was probably most famous for one of his first films, which was Love Story with Ally McGraw. And, I mean, that was the one that everybody went to the movie and cried about. And then he also did, I mean, he did a bunch of stuff. He was a very, very good actor. Paper Moon, he did some stuff with Barbara Streisand. Probably most famous for the fact that he was married one, two, or three times to Farrah Fawcett.
I was going to ask you that. I was going to say, Miss Darlene, wasn't he married to the gorgeous Farrah Fawcett, who was the dream boat for all of us young boys that grew up with that famous orange swimsuit poster that we all had on our wall.
Yeah, he was married to her.
Well, there and we go. The I mean, I'm learning a lot about Ryan O'Neal.
There
well,
you go,
there
Ryan.
Are a bunch more movies, you know.
Well, I know. Yeah.
Three. And then the other thing was one of the guys said that way back in the 70s that Bama only played two games, that colleges could only play two games a season. I think it was they were restricted to three.
Okay.
Oh, you mean on TV?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, there was restrictions by the NCAA with how many you could play. So that is absolutely, that's well, why when they opened
when
it up,
North Carolina,
yeah.
My parents would call me on, would make sure they would call a special, well, they called every Saturday morning, but Bama's going to be on TV this afternoon. Don't miss it.
Oh, yeah. No, I can remember, you know, I remember LSU played Alabama to start a season beginning of the year in a slop fest. It was 6-3. And in fact, it was 79. I can tell you what it was. LSU, Curly McClendon's last year. Coach Bryant really loved Coach Mack. I mean, because it was one of his boys. But that last year that Coach Mack was there, he played two number one teams in Tiger Stadium, Alabama. Then he played that great USC team and was probably the most famous game in Tiger Stadium that LSU never won. And that was his last season. And that was during the season, it was announced that the North Carolina State coach and former Woody Hayes disciple, Bo Ryan, was going to replace Charlie McClendon. Bo Ryan takes the LSU job and never coaches a game at LSU. He died tragically in a plane crash a month after he took the job on a recruiting trip. So, but that last year that Coach Mack was there, he played, you know, Alabama in a Alabama was number one. Tiger Stadium lost. It was like 6-3. And again, three field goals, sloppy field, raining. And then LSU, you know, lost to USC. So, yeah.
Darlene, you want to jump in? Anything else?
No, I was just going to catch you up on those two things.
Well, thank you.
And you've already heard enough Bryant stories. So.
Now, Darlene, let's be honest now. Ryan O'Neal was good looking, but he wasn't as good looking as Ryan Fowler. am I right? Is that right?
Well, that's true. Very true.
It's Ryan's show, so Miss Darlene, you must make sure that you say that.
Well, I mean, since we're reliving all these memories of me, I'll add this to it. Many people may or may not know, but if I shave this beard, I've got a dimple that is literally as deep as you will ever find a dimple, okay? I have got a hole in my chin, and this will...
Oh, that's the Robert Mitchum look.
No. Here's what they called me as a kid. This was no kid. They called me Little Kirk for Kirk Douglas. Because it is absolutely...
That's why he has dimples, too.
And I got so tired of people making fun of this hole. Because it's kind of cool when you're a kid. But when you get an adult, you got this thing in your chin. And, you know, it's kind of hard to shave around, to be honest with you, too. So I just grew a beard. I said, forget it. I'm going to cover it up.
You know who has the biggest dimple chin I've ever seen personally in my life?
Who?
You're going to get to know him real quick because he just joined Alabama staff, Bill O'Brien.
Really? Okay.
Yes,
okay.
He does.
Okay.
He does. He's got a real, it's as big as anyone. Not big, but it's deep, like you said.
Yeah.
I don't know how he'd shave that. I don't know how he'd shave that.
Chris, are we going to be happy with him this year?
I think you're going to be real happy with him. He's a really outstanding coach, and I think the fact that he and Doug Marrone are coming together is going to be really important. They like each other, work with one another back in the day, and Doug will have a real influence on the run game, and Bill will really oversee the entire offense, but be really good with the passing game with the quarterbacks. This is really good. We haven't even got to it, but since we're on last week, Robert Gillespie is a great recruiter. And then they're trying to get Jay Graham. I mean, this is becoming kind of like an all-star type staff, and there's always adjustments. But see, when you get Bill O'Brien and Doug Marrone, those are two not adjusting to one another. That's kind of a two for one. They already can finish each other's sentences. So I think it's going to work real well.
Thank you, Darlene.
Well, that's great to hear.
Thank you, Ms.
Thank you, Darlene. Have a wonderful evening. We appreciate you being part of the show.
You be good. Roll Tide.
Right back to you, Darlene, North Carolina. Terry, Richmond, Virginia. Terry, good afternoon. You're in the game.
Hey, Ryan. Hey, Chris. How you doing?
Good. How are you? How's everything in beautiful Richmond?
It's great. I've been hearing you on the radio, I bet 20 years. Haven't you not?
You talking about Ryan or me?
You, Chris.
Yeah. Actually, did some stuff in Richmond for years too.
I think you did. I remember hearing you back quite a few times.
I can't remember. There were a couple of different hosts there. Did for quite some time. And yes, sir.
Was it Big Al?
No, I'm trying to think. It was Wes.
Wes McElroy.
Yes, Wes McElroy. And I forgot the guy. That was before Wes. I feel bad he went somewhere in North Carolina, did some shows with him. But did that. And then there were a big Fox affiliate. And, of course, I was doing a lot of national radio with Fox Sports Radio, right. And they were one of our big affiliates too. So, could have been that.
That's great. But I wanted to tell you thanks. That was an awesome tribute to Coach Bryant that you had to lead off the show. I mean, that was great. I really appreciate that.
It was great. I mean, I think we're all on the edge of their seat telling their stories. And Chris is a good storyteller about these connections, but taking the knowledge and combining that, it was a lot of fun to hear him kind of go into that.
Absolutely. And one of the ones that I called in, I was on hold when you were telling those, and probably my favorite, and I was going to tell Ryan this because I don't know, was about when they installed the wishbone. In that summer, Ryan, that was the summer of 71 when they were starting practice in August. And they used to have a thing called the Skyriders Tour. You remember that, Chris?
Yes. Yes, they used to. Instead of everybody going to Birmingham or Atlanta, they'd take, you know, because there wasn't as many media, they'd take 25 or 30 of media folks and they put them on a plane and they go to every city. 10 cities, because there were 10 cities. There were 10. Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Go to all the campuses and view practice and everything.
Yep.
And Coach Bryant had them out there. He was coming off of 6-5 seasons, I think.
Yes.
And yeah, so he had them out there running the pro set and everything. And the writers were saying, Alabama looks like a middle of the pack team this year, you know, and that's what they wrote. And then opening game was in Los Angeles against Southern Cal, and they broke out the wishbone.
Yes, sir.
And after the game, you know, Coach Bryant and John McKay were really good friends, and supposedly John McKay met him at, you know, midfield, and he said, "Where did you get that formation?" And Coach Bryant said, "Well, I didn't like how we were performing, you know, in the pro set, and so I installed it." So, and the other thing I wanted to ask you, Chris, you talked about John Mitchell.
Yes.
And tell me if this isn't right. Wasn't he from Mobile?
Yes, sir.
Yep.
Yes, sir.
And didn't he go to junior college, like in Arizona or something? Yeah.
Arizona. And yes, sir. He sure did.
I think John McKay was the one that tipped off Coach Bryant, and he said,
"That's correct.
We're looking at this guy." And he said, "Heck, you should sign him." Well, wasn't he Alabama's first African-American player?
He was, and I think he would maybe help me, but I always get this mixed up. There were two, Wilbur and
Wilbur Jackson.
I don't know which one got in the game first. One of our
listeners. Yeah, I'm not sure.
One of them was signed before the other, and one of them played in the game. And so it's kind of like, you know, but yes, that's exactly it. In fact, one of Coach Bryant's best friends he was very close with John McKay, and it was mainly due to one of the assistants for John McKay. And they said, you know, the kid with John Mitchell, the kid at the time, we call him kid, you know, he wants to go back close to home, you know, and you know, so he really didn't want to. I mean, I think USC recruited him, but I think he knew that. And back then in those days, you'd kind of do that. And in fact, if you liked the kid and he didn't want to go to your place, you didn't want him to go to Auburn or Georgia or LSU.
Right.
You'd rather him go to, you know, Arizona, whatever, and vice versa. So I think that was kind of the main thing that really got John. Well, I mean, John wanted to come back home. I mean, that was the bottom line.
Is that right? Okay.
And I think that, you know, it was just about this kid's good enough. And I don't know, because film wasn't as prevalent today. So, you know, you know about John Mitchell, but you lose him for 2 years and all of a sudden they see him out west and there's a little bit of a buddy network to say, "Hey, look, you know, you have my back, I'll have yours." And yeah, we seen this kid play in person. You ought to really sign him. And then back then you signed him. And if the kid wasn't all that good and John was, well, then, you know, you didn't have scholarship limits and all that kind of stuff. But that was in the time they, and then, you know, you had Sylvester come in, Sylvester Croom.
Yeah,
and then, it was John Mitchell that really forged the very close relationship with Ozzie Newsome. Not that Ozzie was going anywhere else, but you know, he really developed a close relationship with Ozzie. And, you know, if there was any chance of Ozzie leaving, you know, I think that was out of the window because of that close relationship. Because
back then,
could do that, yeah.
Coach Bryant loved Ozzie Newsome, didn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Loved him.
Yeah. Ozzie revered him. You know, anybody did.
Sylvester Croom also. You know, Sylvester was one of his assistant coaches early on. I mean, he was a graduate assistant, wasn't he?
Yes. Yes.
There's pictures of them from, like, mid-70s in Sylvester on the sidelines coaching.
Absolutely. And you could do those things back then to where, and again, this was Coach Bryant. He was a great fundraiser and all that. So you could you can take care of your GAs so they go to school, but you could pay them some money to have we used to have volunteer coaches, which, what do you think a volunteer coach? What does that suggest? Well, you had volunteer coaches making back then 18 grand a year, which is pretty good money back then, you know, and it's things like that. Coach Bryant understood the rules and he understood how to take advantage of it. That's another thing, Ryan. That's another niche. Hey, we can have analysts that are not on the field. We're going to have all the analysts. We're going to have the best analysts and we're going to have the most of them. And you know what? We're going to take advantage of it.
And let me go out and recruit NFL guys that don't have a job to come back and prepare players on the scout team. Right.
And by the way, half of them are getting paid a lot of money by some other school that just fired them, and we can pay them less than anybody else has to pay them. And so we can have even more guys to go
along with them. Just
it's super. It's super.
It's really smart. You know, it's really sharp.
Terry, I got to get to break, but let me add something real quick to the John Mitchell story. Go to Roll Tide and search for Roman Harper, the documentary that he was the moderator on. He actually sat down with John Mitchell this year back in December. I know it was kind of missed. We were, in the run of a, undefeated season, maybe didn't spend as much time. But I text Roman and told him, Roman did an absolute brilliant job. And,
well, thank you.
Because
I will.
You never, and I know Chris said he was connected with John Mitchell. John never tells his story. Rarely do you ever hear him telling his story because he didn't want to really be known as this particular individual. But he finally opens up and he tells Roman these stories. And I'm telling you, it's on the edge of your seat, cold chills, as he's telling these stories that you guys were just sitting here talking about a couple of minutes ago. But I gotta run to break, Terry.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Terry, Richmond, Virginia. We will go to Steve in Tuscaloosa, Rich in Atlanta, Chris Landry, Ryan Fowler on Alabama Tradition, the past, present, and future of the Alabama Crimson Tide.
Mark's Mark in downtown Northport, under that Roll Tide Bridge. You're going to find the great stuffed mushrooms, the stuffed peppers, the twice baked potatoes, the great ribeyes, that high choice that you will find, the fillets, the beef and chicken kebabs, the Wonder Roast Chicken, the chicken swirls, home of the chicken swirl since 1978, the stuffed steak burgers, the Cajun pork chops, the homemade rolls, those great Alabama local products that you cannot find anywhere else. It's our friends at Mark's Mark in downtown Northport. Call ahead for those special things at 205-710-5636. You'll find Mark's Mark, locally owned and operated by Jacob King. Go see the guys, Mark's Mark, downtown Northport. Mark's Mark. If you want to dominate the grill this weekend, it's Mark's Mark in downtown Northport. Brian Harden Construction, a very diverse business here in West Alabama, serving our community, our neighboring states, and throughout the great state of Alabama. It's Brian Harden Construction. Crane and equipment rentals, a crane up to 300 ton available. The CNC machines, the reverse engineering, the laser cutting, specialist in modern construction. It's bhardenconst.com. The experience you can count on. Let's build something together. The great services they offer. The leader in the industry, Brian Harden Construction, and they are expanding their team. If you're looking for a job and you are a structural welder, a pipe fitter, or a pipe welder, Brian Harden Construction is looking for you, and you can start that process on bhardenconst.com, bhardenconst.com, or contact them off of Foster's Industrial Drive here in Tuscaloosa. It's Brian Harden Construction.
The host of the game, Ryan Fowler, and the host of the Martin Houston Show, Martin Houston, have combined to offer a show filled with in-depth analysis of Alabama football and more. Alabama Tradition broadcasts live on Tide 100.9 every Tuesday from 6 to 7 p.m. and is available live and on playback on numerous affiliates around the Southeast. Check out alabamatradition.com for a list of affiliates, as well as other great content.
All right, so we welcome you right back into Alabama Tradition. That's Chris Landry. I'm Ryan Fowler. We'll get right back to the phone call. Steve in Tuscaloosa. Steve, you're on with Chris and Ryan. I hope all is well.
Everything's great. How are you doing?
Super. Outstanding.
Good, Steve.
Okay. I'm not sure if y'all have a particular topic of conversation tonight, but I do have something that I wanted to ask your expertise on. You're more involved in, it's about the Alabama basketball team. I'm a huge Alabama basketball fan and have been ever since I moved to Tuscaloosa 40-something years ago. But the last time I think I remember going and seeing Alabama playing Kentucky, it was standing room only in the auditorium in Coleman Coliseum. And I had to sneak in through a buddy I knew that worked security on the ground floor and come up through the basement and sit in the aisle, but the aisles were full. Let me put it that way.
I got you.
Anyway, my question is, did the NCAA or did the SEC put out some kind of a, I would call it a reverse dress code for the coaches this year.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Yeah,
they're all wearing t-shirts and sweats, huh? I noticed that.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. I really don't.
Although Calipari is in a sport coat tonight.
He's in a sport coat, but he hasn't been wearing a tie this year, though.
No, yeah, I noticed that. So, and most of those guys, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it is. Maybe.
I haven't looked at the other conferences to see if some, you know, the coach of, you know, but I think I saw the coach of Duke with some kind of sweatsuit on coaching the other night.
That's right. No, yeah, I have noticed that. I have noticed that.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's just, you know, it's kind of like nobody's showing up to the party because there's no fans. Right. We're going to dress down. I don't know what it is, but I have noticed that. So,
And I guess I had to eat my own words because the first time I noticed it was watching Auburn play. And I'm not sure if it's the game against us. And Bruce Pearl was out there and he had his, you know, he just had a polo shirt on and didn't even have it tucked in, you know, just had it, you know, hanging, you know.
Just
hanging. And I said, man, that's, you know.
Hey, a couple of quick things.
He
a couple of things.
Well,
I'm sorry.
To do better than that. And then the next thing I know, I flip over on our, you know, see Alabama playing. Our coach, he's got a polo shirt on and it untucked.
Yeah, I wish I knew. I just don't.
I miss Coach Sanderson's plaid coats is what I miss. Real quick, two things. Coach Sanderson's my all-time favorite. Was remember when Latrell Sprewell went into the NBA and he choked PJ Carlesimo? Remember that whole incident?
Yeah.
Okay. They asked Coach Sanderson, hey, did he ever do that to you? He said, no, but I was one hell of a candidate.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Yeah, he says, yeah. He says, I was a hell of a candidate.
Oh,
man.
That's awesome.
It was so great. And I tell you the best Alabama basketball memory I have.
Ryan,
and it was 1976, and it was in the Assembly Center in Baton Rouge in the Mideast Regional in the NCAA playoffs. And I don't know how many people remember, but the last unbeaten untied team, well, there's no ties in basketball, I'm sorry, last unbeaten team in college basketball is a 1976 Indiana team. And I saw with my own eyes in person, CM Newton's Alabama team taking it to Bobby Knight's Indiana team. And they had them dead in the water. I mean, they were pressing them and it looked like it was over. And that was the game that people forget. People remember them coming back and beating Michigan in the championship game and Indiana, you know, all the title, Kent Vince and all that group. But not many people know that the big threat of them that year, because nobody really threatened them in the Big Ten. It was a couple of close games. But Alabama's CM Newton team had them beat, and I guess the late Danny Green would say they let them off the hook. But I remember that, and then I remember the great Reggie King and some others, but Coach Sanderson was a national treasure. Is a national treasure. I'm sorry, I don't mean it past
that. And Steve, I gotta get to the final call here. We've only got like 3 minutes left in the show. I'm trying to split it between
you. I'll talk to you next time, buddy.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks for calling.
Steve always aggravates me because I don't talk enough basketball, so he's always telling me. But you know, when you got Nick Saban winning 6 out of the last 12, it's, you know. You might
be talking about it this year now, the rest of the way. If they keep doing this, man, that's impressive. With
no doubt. Let's go to Rich in Atlanta. Rich, I've only got about 2 minutes. It's all yours, man. Let it rip.
Hey, Ryan, thanks for taking my call. Thanks, Chris. It's a real honor to talk to you, sir. And I speak for all of Ryan's listeners when I say you do a tremendous job. And I hope you can stay with us for the rest of the year because you sure are a lot of fun and you are an absolute encyclopedia of information. And I wanted to thank you for that. And I don't even know where to start. I mean, I was going to ask you, you know, I've been listening the whole time. I was going to say, do you remember when Bobby Knight slammed the phone down here at the
Yes, Omni I do. I do. I do remember that, yeah.
And then do you remember Clarence Davis? I know you and Terry were having a great conversation. Clarence Davis is the guy that's forgotten in that, you know, when people talk about Wilbur Jackson and John Mitchell, he was the running back from Birmingham. that was at USC that Coach Bryan couldn't recruit, if you recall.
That's correct.
And he wound up, ironically enough, he was Kenny Stabler's running back on the Raiders, remember?
That's absolutely right. There's no question about it. Yeah, no, and that was, you know, we'll get into it. I know we're running short of time, but going back to that old USC, you know, home and home, you know, you never quite, the story was like, it's not told, but was kind of understood. And people that were there, that Coach Bryant knew what needed to have happen, but he also knew in Alabama with the governor how he needed to handle things with integration. And there's a lot of belief that those games were scheduled with the idea to kind of open people's eyes to, you know what, if we don't join the party, then this is what we're missing. And, you know, and somehow some of the stories may be, you know, exaggerated, but the premise of why he did it and what happened, and in some cases the whooping they took and Sam Bam Cunningham, all that was done for a reason, and was done orchestrated and was done by his relationship with John McKay, and again is really good friend that he also had on his staff.
We are out of time, Rich. I'm so sorry, brother.
That's all right. I was going to ask him one more thing. That's all right. I'll call him next week.
Yeah, please do.
Next week. Please do it. Rich. Thanks for the text.
Thanks, Chris.
Yeah, Chris Landry, LandryFootball.com. LandryFootball.com. Chris, we got like seconds to get out of here. I really appreciate it as always. It's a lot of fun, and this hour flies by, man. It's crazy.
It really was. A lot of fun. Really, really appreciate everybody calling in and looking forward to doing it again next week.
LandryFootball.com. Big thanks to James Ludeman, the entire team over on Tide 100.9. We will continue. James Ludeman takes you for the next 2 hours right here on Tide 100.9, the home of Alabama Crimson Tide Sports.
This might not be an easy time. There's rivers to cross and hills to climb. Some days we might fall apart. And some nights might feel cold and dark. But nobody wins afraid of losing. And the hard roads are the ones we're choosing. Someday we'll look back and smile.